Are you ready? Are you ready to take massive action towards building a life and lifestyle that rewards you with a fit body, endless supplies of mental and physical energy, and total freedom from guilt around food and exercise? This is Cut the Fat Podcast. It's Ray and Blythe. How are you doing? I hope you're having a wonderful, wonderful day. And how are you doing, Blythe?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful. Thank you for asking. The sun is shining here in Colorado, and I am looking forward to getting outside today because if you haven't heard, we have had a couple of storms come through. I mean, the entirety of the United States has had a couple of storms come through recently, and we've just had a cold snap. So today is the first warmer day, and I'm looking forward to getting out.
Nice. And today's topic is a really simple topic. It's 9 things you didn't know about weight loss. And, you know, if you've been a listener of the show, it's possible you're going to already know a few of these, but who cares? Repetition is the mother of all skills. So we're just going to keep on hitting you with the stuff that matters, and hopefully it'll just, you know, burrow into your head and your mind and your soul and just become a part of who you are, right?
Right. And it's good to hear things, you know, hear repetition, because sometimes we take the golden nuggets out of the podcast that apply to us in that moment or in that week or in that month. And by hearing the same things over and over again, we might ring a new bell for you. You might be like, oh, that's something I know I've heard that before, but now it's time for me to implement that. So, you know, some of the same golden nuggets coming out today, but they might apply to your life differently now.
Excellent. Yes. Very good point. So let's jump in. Sound good?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So number one is conflicted values lead to weight gain. And
okay,
let me explain what that means. So a value is simply something that is important to you. And these values, these things that are important to us, exist in our mind, usually at a subconscious level, in a hierarchy, which means that some values are more important to you than others. And that's a very, very important thing to notice.
Right.
In a study from Stanford University and the University of Waterloo, published in the journal Psychological Science, researchers discovered that when women were asked to list out all of their values and then write about the one that was most important, they had smaller waistlines and BMIs compared to those who did not write about their values. And they speculated that when we focus on what's important to us, we feel better about ourselves. And that feeling better about ourselves has a positive kind of domino effect in our life and our lifestyle.
Right, absolutely. It helps build confidence. It helps you kind of own what you're doing in your life. And when you do something that makes you feel good, that takes like a domino effect in the rest of your life, just like you said.
Right. And in addition, when we start to really think about our values and take them out of the unconscious mind and put them into our conscious thinking, it starts to give us some self-awareness. And with self-awareness, we start to develop and manufacture choice in our life. If we don't know something, if we don't know it consciously, we can't consciously make a different choice, right?
Right. So stronger senses of autonomy, self-control, self-awareness, all builds confidence. And when you start doing things that you really enjoy, that make you feel good and take ownership, you start making better choices because it is now in your, you know, right in front of your face and in a new level of awareness for you.
Right. So there's this really cool and simple exercise that I'd recommend and even challenge you guys to try. Okay. It's very simple. As a matter of fact, I did this recently with both myself and my wife. And the reason it came up was because of the fact that, you know, we had this day, we had this night off where we gave the kids to the grandparents, and ultimately we went out, we had a nice dinner, and then Wifey wanted to go and, you know, listen to the live music and, you know, and hang out in a bar for a little while and just, you know, chit chat and things like that. And I wanted to go home and watch a movie, you know, hang out on the couch and watch a movie together. And it ultimately became this big conflict, right? As many married folk have and people in relationships have. And the next day we were kind of, you know, debriefing ourselves and talking about, well, what happened here? You know, what happened? And ultimately we sat down and we went through our values. And you know, one of the things that she really values is kind of variety. And that's kind of how she, you know, that's what ultimately equals fun and relaxation to her. For me, it's peace. And when I'm
which explains
kind of at peace,
the movie and the couch, right?
Right, hanging out on the couch, you know, in crowds. I'm an introvert, so crowds kind of stress me out a little bit. And and so what was happening was we had these value conflicts that were ultimately, you know, if we didn't know about them, we would not be able to change them in positive ways, right? And it would be this regular conflict that we would have. And when we look back on our relationship, the times where we have these types of conflicts ultimately are conflicts in values, in what we value. And we just have to be more cognizant of that and within the relationship in order to make it better. Now, right. Within our own lives, we also have values that conflict together. But before we're able to really uncover where those conflicts lie, we have to uncover what values are, quote unquote, valuable to us. So here's the exercise. And I want you to kind of think of this as we're doing it. Let's just do it in a very small way. Does that sound good?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's, for argumentative purposes, say you have five values that are your top values. Do you happen to know what your top values are?
I value having an outside of the family social life. So I'm not a big girls' night out type person. I like to spend time with my husband, but without the kids, because I think that helps us build our relationship outside of just the family unit. You know, we definitely need to keep that alive, and I think everybody who's married or has been married knows that's very important. So that's probably my number one. My number two is
if you had to put it into a single word, what would you say that word would be? And I'll give you an example of your values in a sense of single word would be happiness, family, honesty, passion. These would all be values that we could put into a single word. So
single word. Number one would be health. And I have a couple of different categories under health. So,
no problem. Yep, just health is good.
Oh, health. Okay. Number two would be relationship is probably too broad of a word.
Love marriage is good.
Mm-hmm. Marriage. Love. Okay, good. Family.
Mm-hmm.
Fitness.
Mm-hmm. Well, fitness I put under health.
Okay. So that falls under that category. Activity?
Probably fall under health as well, but...
Okay. You can tell what I like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Another one would be... communication.
Ooh, communication. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is that four or five?
That's four. That's good enough because for our purposes, what I usually recommend is sitting down, and you do this for yourself, and then if you feel so inclined, you can do it with your significant other. But if we're talking specifically about how this relates to health and weight loss, let's say you take and you write out about your top the 20 values that come to mind for you in a single word. In this case, you gave me four. So after you have your 20 values, what I usually recommend you do is pick 12. Pick the 12 that are most important to you. And then you go through this exercise. Here's what you do, Bly. So if I were to say to you, health and love, you could only have one in your life. Which one would you choose?
Health.
Health. Wow. And if you...
Because I feel like that leads to love.
Okay, so that leaves love. You can only choose one, love or family.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
Uh-huh.
Family.
Family. Great. Okay, so you could only choose one, love or communication. You could have a life filled with love but zero communication, or a life filled with tons of communication but no love.
Oh, man. You're putting me on the spot.
I am.
Let's see. I'm going to say communication.
Wow. Okay. And so then that leaves... love
is number four.
Okay, so this is a really great exercise, and it really does explain a lot about how we make our choices. So when it comes to health versus love, you may choose something, doing something that would be considered healthy, like maybe going to the gym, instead of something that might be love related, right? So you might cancel a date, for example, because you haven't worked out in 3 days and you feel miserable about yourself.
Yes,
because of that.
True.
And with families the same way. Like you would potentially stay in a relationship where if there was a young child, for example, you would stay in a relationship that because you perceive leaving a relationship as being harmful to the child, mm-hmm. because that family is such an important factor to you. So you would give up love for family in based on the circumstances.
Okay.
So
true.
You think in terms of how these values compete with each other. So, you know, how does family compete with love in certain cases? Well, you know, if you're driving your kids around all the time, and a lot of our listeners, you know, talk about this, if you're driving your family, your kids to all these different practices and things, you've got five kids and each one of them has three or four different activities that they have to get to, you will give up, you know, you could potentially have family competing with your ability to be healthy. Same
right.
thing as if your spouse brings home Kentucky Fried Chicken every day.
I totally get it. I think you just threw out a handful of golden nuggets right there. This will resonate with a lot of people, including me. I love this exercise. I'm doing it with my husband.
And, you know, what's also fascinating is a lot of people are oftentimes going to be surprised by what comes up, you know, as you may have been just from that little simple exercise. And we didn't really give you a lot of time to think on this. And in all likelihood, if you were to redo this whole exercise again, it may show up a little bit differently, only because it was just, and it was just as an exercise to show people how this works. But the reality is a lot of people may find, as my wife did, when we got to her top 10 values, health didn't fall on that list. It was 13th or 14th down the line. And
right.
it was a shocker for her. And it also explained why she has much more difficulty sticking to an exercise routine.
Right.
And because health is so far down the list, everything else takes the time away. So that's why when I say conflicted values lead to weight gain, it's oftentimes the fact that you either don't have health on your list of values, meaning you don't value it yet, or you've got 10 things above it, and those 10 things take precedence.
Right. So how often would you suggest people reevaluate their values?
You know, doing it once is like a epiphany for people.
Yes, yes,
and,
totally.
And, you know, if you do it once, you've done it one more time than most people on this earth will ever do it in their entire lives. So start with one, and then you could do it once a year. It'd be a great exercise to run through once a year as things shift and change. You just run through the exercise again. And one thing that I did, which is how I went about doing it, was I went on Amazon and I got value cards. So it's like a pack of cards with each card has a value on it and a brief explanation of what that value means. And then me and my wife, we just sat down and it was like 50 cards, and she took out the top 20. And then from there, we did this exercise and we had this long string of values in front of us, of cards that were set out in terms of what was most valuable to least valuable. And when we put our two sets of cards in front of each other, they were actually quite different on many fronts. And you can just start, you know, going back and dissecting, where did this conflict come from in our lives? And you can go back to old conflicts and say, oh my gosh, this makes total sense now.
Right.
That's like when we got into it, and what's interesting is it's Valentine's Day is tomorrow. So it's fascinating that this came up at this time. I didn't intend it to go down this path. But it really is so important when we're talking about health and wellness, because a lot of people are sitting around scratching their heads, wondering, why can't I stick to my lifestyle program? And this is it. They've got either values that are conflicting with it, or they simply don't have it on their list of values at all.
Okay. So I love it. So maybe just a tip for the listeners out there, maybe for your New Year's goal or resolution next year, you know, December 31st or January 1st, you pop that on your calendar as a reminder. Hey, I'm going to start off the new year by reevaluating my list of values and kind of prioritizing things. And that'll help you get a grip on whatever you're trying to implement into your life if you're looking to make change.
Right. Self-awareness breeds choice. And until you have that awareness, you don't have the choice, right? And that's just the reality of it. And one little tip before we move on to number two, I can't believe we're just on number one still, but try piggybacking values. So if health is further down the list and let's say family is way up the list, you know, is number one or number two, then when you are going to your kids, when you're driving your kids to football practice, you might combine that with walking around the field as they're practicing, rather than sitting in the car and working through Facebook.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a way where you piggyback two values on top of each other. Another way is growth and learning is way up on my list. And health is obviously up on my list. And I can combine those two together by listening to audiobooks as I'm exercising and working out.
Right,
and
right.
So, you know, that's another way that you can kind of combine things to supercharge, you know, how likely you are to ultimately do the thing you want to do less. You know,
that's a great tidbit. Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Total epiphany. I love it. Okay. I am ordering value cards. I am. I totally love this idea. And I think that it's really going to resonate with clients and our listeners. Great place to start.
I'll send you mine. I took a picture of the my cards listed out on the floor. I'll text it over to you.
Okay. Super cool.
Okay, so number two is a big one for you, I know, and that is cutting your restaurant budget cuts weight.
Yes, it totally can. I do enjoy eating out. Don't get me wrong. I like food just like everybody else, and I like not cooking. You know, sometimes we just moved, and I'll tell you, we ate out three nights in a row just because, well, you don't have access to pots, pans, silverware, you know, all that stuff during a move. So, yes, eating out actually adds a lot of unseen calories, types of fats that you probably normally wouldn't choose to put in your food, even if you order a salad or something. You know, a lot of times they'll put, for me, way too much dressing, or, you know, you're not sure if you're going to like the dressing they put on there, and then they douse the salad and dressing, or, you know, just something that you normally wouldn't choose. And that can be fun because it kind of helps you get outside the box for new flavors and new foods and things, but it also can hold a lot of hidden calories. You know, I'll never forget when I was living in Australia, I worked at a restaurant, and it was an upscale, beautiful restaurant. And I came in early one morning. Somebody asked me to cover the breakfast shift, and I was hostessing and waitressing and doing stuff. And I usually worked like the afternoon shift, so I never saw the kitchen open. And one morning I came in and I was, you know, chatting it up with the chefs, and they were doing all the food prep before the restaurant opened. And I remember watching the chef grab a pair of tongs and pulling I didn't know what it was, but it was a chicken breast out of a vat of oil for storage. So I don't know how every restaurant does it. I'm not picking on any particular restaurant, but they stored that chicken breast in vegetable oil. And that's certainly something I would never do at home. And that's why they were so juicy. And that's why it tasted so flavorful, and why it tasted better than any chicken breast, you know, I had ever tried to cook. But it certainly wasn't healthy.
Right. And, you know, I love how you describe that as kind of like beneath the surface calories. I call them phantom calories.
Yes.
They're, that's the problem. It's not the calories that we see. It's, you know, it's not like, okay, well, it's a chicken breast. Look up chicken breast on your app, like, you know, mm-hmm. like what's the app that you like to
My
use?
Fitness Pal My Fitness or Pal, Lose It, something like
Lose
that.
It, one of those. And they'll give you a caloric count for a chicken breast. The problem is that chicken breast is a chicken breast cooked at home. You know, when you take into account that this chicken breast has been stored in oil and that more oil is added in the cooking process, mm-hmm. and then that one chicken breast ends up delivering far more calories than you expect, and you can't register them. Your mind cannot register them. And that's a big problem. In fact, just eating just one meal a week away from home can translate into 2 extra pounds of a year for the average person. Take that. That's 1 pound. That's one meal a week can right. ultimately end up with 2 extra pounds a year. The average adult eats out nearly 5 times a week, consuming 134 additional phantom calories per meal. That ultimately can explain a lot of the problems that people have as the years go on, gaining the weight.
Right. And even if you're making healthy choices, you know, like I said, those phantom calories and a chicken breast, you know, chicken breast is something I would totally eat. I make a lot of chicken breasts at my house, but that's something that you can order out that you think is healthy. You're kind of duped. You know, you don't really know what's going on with that when you're ordering food from a restaurant. So yeah. And that's eating out once a week. And most of us eat out more often than that.
You can also take this example, this number two, and do the opposite of it. So you take one meal in your daily, you know, in just your daily meals, one meal a day, and make it entirely vegan, make it entirely vegetables and vegetable based items. And that alone can help to detract a few phantom calories out of the diet in a positive way. So, you know, if you're somebody who eats excessive calories and you know you eat excessive calories, that might be one way to make a simple little shift that works beneath the surface in your favor rather than beneath the surface against your ultimate goals.
Right. And you'll be saving money.
Yep.
All right. What's number three?
Exercising more won't necessarily translate into more weight loss.
Right. And I think we've talked about this a lot. There was a study done.
Podcast on that.
We did. And I didn't write the study down. Maybe you did. But they talked about sedentary men who did 30 minutes a day versus men who did the same activity for an hour.
Yep. And the one who did 30 minutes actually lost more weight.
Yes. So that's something that's kind of against our typical way of thinking or what's been drilled into our minds all these years is more is always better. And actually, working smarter, not harder, applies to this.
And this coming from somebody who's obsessed with exercise and loves exercise.
Me?
You.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know that I'm obsessed, but it's definitely something I enjoy, and it's a great mood lifter for me. And I know it sets the path for my day, and it's become such a habit that that's something that is clearly high on my values list. It's at the top. Because that's something I know that's going to help me throughout the rest of the day. Working smarter, not harder. If you don't have an hour every day to exercise, forget about it. You don't need an hour, 30 minutes. And both you and I suggest, if you can't do anything else, walk for 30 minutes, piggyback those values, walk around the football field while your kids are at practice. You know, there are ways to incorporate 30 minutes of exercise into your day, and it's much simpler than fitting in a whole hour, and it might be more beneficial.
Study after study suggests that exercise is not the weight loss panacea that it's claimed to be when calories are the goal of exercise. And I want to really, you know, highlight that because, you know, I'm a fan of exercise, and in fact, I'm a fan of doing as much exercise as you can do and not drive yourself crazy. Like right. if you love exercise and you want to get out and just do more of it just because you want to do it, then by all means do that. But take a few distinctions with you. You know, Eskimos can survive in very snowy, cold regions because they have I think I read once they have 20 distinctions or 20 different types of snow that they characterize or something along those lines. Okay. And so let me give you just three exercise distinctions, and Blythe, and you take it as I kind of throw these out. So exercise distinction number one: all forms of exercise are not created equal. There are three forms or categories of exercise. One is calorie-centric exercise, which is classic aerobic. That's the one that you see in the majority of research showing that the more exercise you do, it's not necessarily a linear benefit.
Right.
The second form of exercise is hormone-centric exercise. That's high-intensity interval training and metabolic resistance training. These are, you know, where you're not necessarily, you know, lifting heavy weights, but you're really, you know, shortening the duration of the rest in between sets, and you're just really pushing and pushing and pushing to trigger a hormonal reaction in the body. And then number three is muscle-centric exercise, which is, of course, resistance training.
Right. Well, so going back to number one, calories in versus calories out is not the equation when it comes to losing body fat. And a lot of people are still hung up on the whole calories in versus calories out. And but if I go on the step mill for 45 minutes and I burn 432 calories, how come I'm not losing weight? Well, it's because you're not doing the right type of exercise. Cardio is not where fat loss happens. You actually get your cardio in when you, okay. Let me go back, because there's nothing wrong with doing cardio for heart health. That's why it's called cardio. Cardiovascular improvement happens when you do cardiovascular exercise. You can get cardiovascular exercise while doing metabolic training or high intensity interval training. Both of those with a shorter rest period between sets, which is why I suggest supersetting exercises. You know, you could go from doing a jumping jack to push-ups and then go back to the jumping jacks and then do push-ups. So taking two exercises, doing one right after the other, you know, with 10 or 20 second rest, maybe 30 seconds in between, whatever allows your heart rate to come down so you're not gasping for air. But doing these types of workouts are really where the hormonal change or shift is triggered. And that is where you're going to access body fat. And this is what's so important. It only takes 20 minutes to do an exercise like this if you're really pushing hard and working hard. You know, I think we can talk ourselves through 20 minutes of tough exercise versus 60 minutes on a treadmill just, you know, getting your jog in because you feel like, you know, you need to burn 300 calories or whatever within that hour. You get so much bang for your buck doing high intensity interval training. And then on top of that, the resistance training type of exercises where you're building strength, you're building your lean muscle tissue. Your lean muscle tissue is what constitutes the speed of your metabolism. So I'm all about being able to get away with as much as possible. Okay. So if I can have my cake and eat it too, that's the ultimate goal. You know, I want to be able to eat my chili lime cashews as a snack, my total favorite snack. I can't have a huge bag in the house, but I like to be able to have a couple of handfuls of those, you know, while I'm cooking dinner or something like that. And if I can get away with doing that without putting on body fat because I'm doing the high intensity interval training or metabolic type exercises or supersetting, and then doing the resistance training as well, that's the secret for me. And I think for a lot of people out there, if we can get out of that rut, thinking that you have to exercise for a long time, doing some monotonous garbage jog on the treadmill. I mean, I call it garbage because I don't have the patience to do that for 60 minutes. I'd rather get more bang for my buck, push myself through 20 to 30 minutes of a tough workout and feel absolutely fantastic afterwards, because that hormonal shift really gets you feeling good.
Right. And, you know, I will point out, you know, that you can't lose weight without a calorie deficit. The problem is that assuming that you know, running on a treadmill for 60 minutes is what ultimately causes a permanent calorie deficit. What cardio does is it causes a temporary calorie deficit that is then refunded to the body through a natural tendency to want to eat more and move less for the rest of the day. That's right. The problem. It's that compensatory mechanism we talked about in the past.
Yes.
Is that, yeah, you need a calorie deficit in order to burn fat, but the assumption that simply exercising more and or just starving yourself to death causes a permanent calorie deficit is where the mistake is made. It's a temporary calorie deficit that your subconscious mind recovers and refunds back to the body through natural tendencies of slothfulness, of just wanting to move less just because you exercised away those calories, and or hunger that ultimately sneaks beneath the surface to get you to eat more calories throughout the day. So that's why we say, you know, you cannot focus exclusively on the calorie-centric model of exercise in order to get the result. Which then leads me to exercise distinction number two, which is weight loss benefits of exercise shift from stage to stage. In the early stages of weight loss, when you have a lot of weight to lose, burning calories and focusing on calorie-centric exercise, like maybe, you know, jogging for a little bit or riding a cycle bike or walking, things like that, it's a great tool and an effective tool for losing weight. But as you progress into what we call the squishy middle of the weight loss journey, hormone-centric, muscle-centric exercise becomes much, much more important.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So going from a couch potato to being more active is absolutely going to work at the beginning, what we call the sweatpants stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good point.
Exercise distinction number three is after menopause, or for men, after andropause, muscle-centric exercise becomes the core focus of your exercise plan, followed by hormone-centric, followed by calorie-centric exercise. Is that what you noticed too?
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I thought you were going to continue on. Absolutely. You know, we get I get a lot of women specifically that notice this type of shift, and then they fall into what used to work for me, and then they kind of run out of ideas. You know, well, I used to be able to run 3 miles on the treadmill and I was able to manage my weight. Now I do that and I'm gaining weight. Well, that's because of this, the exact reason you just said. You know, you're with your age and with your lifestyle, you have got to make changes. And as you start leaning out, it becomes a little trickier to navigate because it might be something that you've never had to do before. So putting those three into play, that's going to do it for you. That's going to trigger that fat loss again.
You know, something interesting, the person who manages my business here, her name is Haiti. She's preparing to do her first bodybuilding competition.
Yay. I know who she is. I remember her. Yeah.
And one thing she said, you know, as we were talking about this, she said, you know, what's amazing or interesting is that when you start to see the when you look at the women in the silver group, they have a tendency to look better and stronger and more fit than the women that are younger in the younger group who are competing.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. But I've noticed that too.
More of a healthy glow type of look. Yeah. Yeah,
but the point is just because you're menopausal or andropausal doesn't mean you can't make huge strides in your fitness and your health and how you feel and look. So keep that in mind and focus exclusively on muscle centric first, hormone centric second, and then just pepper in a little bit of cardio or calorie centric exercise to support those other forms.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
You ready for number four?
I am.
Exerting self-control is a surprise path to joy. Research from the University of Chicago found that people who showed the greatest self-control also reported more good moods and fewer bad moods. Research into people who live with self-discipline, which was published in the Journal of Personality, discovered that successful people don't have superhuman willpower. Rather, they unconsciously are proactive at avoiding temptation in the first place. And
So they use self-control to set up their lives to avoid problems. It's kind of like a forethought that you have. You know, you're living your life this way as to I hate to say preparation because everyone automatically thinks like, "Oh, well, I have to prepare my food," and then they shut that down. But it's not even as difficult as that. It's arming yourself with a healthy snack and keeping it in your bag or in the glove box of your car. It's just having forethought of what your day is going to look like and having a little bit of preparation. It it adds so much ease to your life. You know, I'm constantly telling my clients, you know, get a little pack of trail mix and keep it in your glove box. Get a Larabar, or, you know, whatever little snack you like to take with you to avoid that dire hunger where you come home and you open up the cabinets and you grab the first thing and just devour it. Because if we think about it ahead of time, and you know you're going to be driving 3 or 4 kids around to 3 or 4 different places, and you're not going to have time to stop for a snack, and this happens repetitively in your life, arm yourself with a snack. Take something along with you. Prepare for that moment so you're not left devouring the first thing you find.
I think the biggest message here is that most people, when they think about self-control and self-discipline, they imagine that it's going to result in a poorer quality of life. Like they think, oh my God, I'm going to have to resist everything. I'm going to have to just eat leaves and twigs and things like that. But
avoid happy hour. I can never do happy hour. I can't.
How often do we hear that? The science doesn't support that idea. The science does not support that self-control and self-discipline ultimately result in a poorer quality of life. The science supports the idea that self-control and self-discipline actually leads to more joy in your life. So just think of it like that. And then, as Bly said, use your willpower. That tiny amount of willpower in your willpower bucket that you wake up with in the morning to set your life up so that willpower becomes irrelevant. Right.
Right. Yeah. So you don't rely on it later in the day when we get tired of making all the choices that we have to make in life.
Absolutely.
Cool. So instead of saying I can't go to happy hour, you might say I don't want to go to happy hour, or I don't want to drink alcohol today, or I don't want to have pizza. I'll get a salad instead. Instead of I can't have pizza, because it kind of one of those empowers you while the other kind of takes away the fun out of life. You know, if you say I can't ever have pizza again, that just kind of that totally sets you up for feeling like you're not in control.
That actually is a great segue into number 5.
Okay.
And that is stop saying, I can't. Research into women who refuse temptation successfully found that they don't use the words, I can't. Instead, they say, I don't. They also reported a stronger sense of autonomy, control, and self-awareness. Now, when women were told by researchers to use I don't rather than I can't, they felt less deprived and so much more empowered that they ultimately kept using the I don't technique even after the study was over.
Wow, so, that's a powerful one.
It is. So think of, let's run through some examples here, Blythe, just off the top of our head. So if you're at a party and somebody says, here, have this cake. And you say, I can't eat that cake. Eat that cake.
Or I would say, I don't really want all that sugar right now.
Right. I don't do birthday cake. I don't do office birthday cake is a good example. So I can't versus I don't. One is it takes the power, like somebody is preventing you from doing it, right? I can't. Well, who's telling you can't? You know, who's telling you that you can't eat the cake?
Right. You're making a conscious choice.
You're acting as though somebody else is doing this to you. And that's a disempowering attitude. When you say, I don't eat birthday cake or I don't eat office birthday cake, you're saying, this is who I am. I don't do that, you know?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I mean, you know, this popped in my head when you were talking about the birthday cake. So there are a lot of us who really just don't like a certain food. And I'm just going to use Brussels sprouts as an example, because you either love them or you hate them. My kids hate them. I love them. They hate when I cook them in the house because it smells like cabbage. But, you know, I'll give them a Brussels sprout on their dinner plate. And they're like, yeah, I don't want to eat that. You know, you don't want to eat something because you don't necessarily like the flavor of it. What's wrong with saying that or using that same sort of idea when it's something that you just aren't choosing to eat? So it's not that you can't stand the taste or you can't stand the texture. It's that you're just choosing not to because it doesn't fit into your values or to your life at the moment.
Right. And you know, you can also run this exercise in the opposite, you know, just like we did previously. When you're thinking in terms of, well, I can't go to the gym. Mm-hmm. You know, run this little exercise in your mind and instead replace I can't with I don't. I don't go to the gym. How does that feel? It really feels very uncomfortable for me to say that.
Yeah.
And that
makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it when you think in terms of that is your inner guide telling you when, you know, if you say I can't go to the gym, that doesn't feel so bad. It's like, it's okay, I can't go to the gym. And when they say I don't go to the gym, well, then it's you making the conscious decision that that's not who you are. And that either feels good to you or it feels bad to you. If it feels bad to you, you know that that's not who you are and that you are acting, outside or against a value that is important to you.
Right. Ooh, I like that. That flip-flop was good.
All right. Let me see what's next on the list here. So, okay, number 6. Talk to your friends about things that empower and energize. According to the journal Sex Roles, if our friends feel pressure to lose weight and be thin, then so do we, even if we're in terrific shape. Research also found that talking about exercise and fitness led to far less body dissatisfaction than talking about calories. So you could have two ways of getting to the promised land, if you will, by controlling calories or becoming physically fit and healthy. One way empowers you. One way leads to better body satisfaction, mm-hmm. even if you haven't changed anything about your body yet, compared to the other way. It's really about the words we're using in this case will mold how we feel in the moment, in the instant that we use those words. So when you're talking to your friends, don't be the I'm on a diet girl or the I'm on a diet guy. Don't be that person. That's not empowering. That right. doesn't energize you or them. And what you do impacts them, impacts what you feel, impacts how they feel. That's what this data suggests.
Yeah, you know, something I've done a little experiment with in my relationship with my husband is, you know, we'll go through busy times in life, like moving, okay? This is something I've kind of recently experimented with. And I just, you know, yes, we were moving. Yes, we were busy. Yes, we were tired. Did I make time to exercise? Yes. Did he make time to work out? No. So I just decided, well, I'm going to go do that. I'm going to go, even if it's just for a quick 20 minutes to get out of the house, break up the monotony of looking at all these boxes in my house. I've just got to take a break. And I found that it was unspoken. So I didn't say, I really feel like I need to go work out. I just said, you know what, I'm going to go work out and feel free to join me. And because I did it, he eventually, like the second day, came along with me. And it wasn't like, hey, I have to go to the gym because I feel like I need to work out. It was, I'm going to go do this for a break. And he decided to join me because it was not setting a good example, but because I was aware of what I wanted to do. And I think he wanted that as well. So even making healthy food choices, you know, sometimes that happens. He'll come home with fast food every once in a while. And I'm like, yeah, well, I don't want to eat that. It doesn't make me feel good. So I'll cook something healthy and he'll put the fast food in the refrigerator and eat healthy. Just by leading by example and not necessarily talking about it all the time is a lot more powerful than you think. And when we surround ourselves with people who live that lifestyle, we end up kind of hopping on board with that.
That is so true. And, you know, we hear that in people who are kind of in our weight loss groups and, you know, weight loss challenges is that mm-hmm. people around them start to tag along, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, whether or not you beg them to or not. Yeah. You don't have to beg people to join you. You know, you might get a little bit of resistance at first from a spouse or something like that. When you dive into a whole new attitude about life and you're, you know, making healthier choices and working out or adding something new to your life. But if you keep doing it and they see how happy you are, odds are they're going to join you in that little pursuit.
Right. Absolutely. Very good. Okay. Number seven is look in the mirror less. According to, I'm gonna butcher the name, Kirsten Grise, author of the book Mirror, Mirror, Off the Wall, women tend to look in the mirror between 30 and 70 times a day. Taking a vacation from the mirror can actually result in you feeling more relaxed and less self-conscious. In her case, in her book, she talked about taking an entire year off from looking in the mirror. And what she said was that her husband noticed that she was far more relaxed, a lot less self-conscious about her body, and just overall, it had such a dramatic and positive impact. Now, you don't have to go a year without looking in the mirror, but why not try a week?
Yeah.
Just to see what happens.
Totally. You know, I'm all for trying things like that, because some of those little things that might sound silly at first make the biggest differences. And I suggest, and I know you're not a huge one for this, but I typically suggest people who are constant weighers, people who step on the scale every time they go in the bathroom to pee, just to see what happened. Like, they're collecting data all day, okay, expending all this energy on looking at the number and wondering what you did and how much did I drink and when did I have salt, or, you know, when did I have too much sodium? Why did I only lose 3 ounces this time when I peed? You know, people who do that tend to drive themselves crazy with the scale eventually. And I tell people sometimes, take a break from your scale. Give the scale to your husband, stick it in the trunk of his car, leave it there for a week, forget about the scale, lose the idea of having to check the number every time you walk into the bathroom. And it's sometimes it works. Sometimes that's just what people need to detach. Give it to your neighbor. Have them stick it in their coat closet. You know, whatever you have to do. But detaching yourself from mirrors and scales and constantly monitoring yourself can be a stressor.
Yeah. I'm skeptical about this one. I don't know. But I thought I'd throw it in there just because there may be that one person who's listening who's like, that's a great idea. I think I need that. You know, the other approach, if we want to try something similar but different, is every time you look in the mirror, stand in a power pose. You know, rather than, you know, if you're going to look in the mirror, stand in a power pose and do it every single time that you go in front of a mirror. And, you know, you see it with people who are very vain. You know, when they walk by a mirror, they don't just look in the mirror. They look in the mirror. You know what I mean?
Chin
you see these people.
Chin up, head held high, put your shoulders back. In fact, I think that by having good posture, just automatically, even if just for a moment, you know, looking in the mirror, doing that, you feel better about yourself. Your body creates more testosterone when you have good posture, shoulders back, chin up, just for a moment. If you can incorporate that every time you look in the mirror and really look in the mirror, that could be a secret for you too.
Yes. And like you said, the research supports that power posing does change the hormones. It increases testosterone and it lowers cortisol, both of which are terrific for weight loss. That being said, you know, it doesn't take much. You know, all we're saying is look in the mirror and see your best self.
There you go. Know? That's a good one.
You know, in the coaching profession, you know, we talk about one of the greatest gifts that a coach gives to a client is what's called unconditional positive regard. Mm-hmm. And what that basically means is the client can do no wrong. The assumption that we have as coaches is that nobody wakes up with bad intentions in the morning, that you make the best choices you can make given the knowledge and the information that you have available to you and the resources that you have available to you at the time. And so it's not about judging. In fact, it's the opposite of judgment. It's unconditional positive regard, meaning that even if you come back a week after, you know, after you've made a commitment to do something and you totally botch it up, the coach never looks at the person and says, you're a bad person for doing that, or you know, that's terrible. Why didn't you do what you said you were going to do?
Right.
Even in our coaching group, we have a kind of an ongoing joke with the challenge that is that if you don't stick to your commitments, you're going to get called out by an angry troll, which is generally Blythe, but you know, Blythe or myself. And we're the happiest angry trolls that you'll ever meet because we go into it with that unconditional positive regard. You can do no wrong. You know, you can make choices that don't serve your long-term goals, but you can still do no wrong. And that's something that I think when you look in the mirror and I say, see your best self, that's what I'm talking about. You know, it's like
there's always something positive to pick out of what you've done, whether or not you completed the entire week's agenda. You know, you might have completed 3 days, which was better than the week before. Maybe you did that for no days. So shining a positive light on what you've done helps create more self-confidence. It helps create a feeling of more control rather than loss of control, because a lot of people have a fear of being judged. You know, all of us have a fear of being judged. And if you know that there's something positive always that comes out, you know, maybe you binged all week. What's the positive side of that? You've come out the other end and you're ready to make change. You know, typically people, you know, fall off the face of the earth for a day or two or three, maybe four, maybe a week. I don't know. You go on vacation, you come back, you're ready to get back. You're ready to get back on it. And we talk about this all the time, but getting back on the horse is what matters. It's not what you did to get there. It's not what you did in the past that we have to worry about. We want to shine the light on the positive part of that. And that is, you're back in the game and you're ready to go again.
Right. How quickly can you get back on the horse? And yes. And what we find is that as you practice it, as you practice getting back on the horse, the more effective and the more and the better you get at it. It's like meditation. You know, we a lot of people quit meditation because they say they can't stop thinking. Like the thinking just overwhelms them, and you know, they try to silence their mind and think, and the thoughts just come on in. Well, what the research suggests is that the thinking part of it, that spontaneous thinking is necessary for the meditation to work. That it's not the silent mind that is what ultimately delivers the benefits of meditation.
Right.
It is the shift back. It's the capturing ourselves doing that thinking and then quieting the mind again. So the more often that you have this spontaneous thoughts come in, the more effective the meditation is, because you keep catching yourself. And every time you say, oh, there's a thought, that brings you back into the meditative state. And that's what ultimately causes the brain to develop and grow in the way that we see in the data on meditation. So yes, how fast you get back on track is similar to the effects of how fast do you catch yourself thinking in meditation. And it is the ultimate determinant of how successful you will be is how fast and effective you are at getting back into balance.
Yes, love it.
Okay, number eight. There's only two more, guys, so stay with us. Number eight, and these will be quick. Exercise for exercise's sake.
Okay.
According to research at the University of Florida, exercising regularly results in people feeling better about themselves even when their body hasn't yet changed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, doing it because it makes you feel better, not look better.
Right. And, you know, this is what we tell people in our groups and on this podcast, is that you don't go at this weight loss focusing on weight loss. You go into it focusing on the behaviors, focusing on building healthy behaviors. When you focus on the behaviors, the weight loss is the result, not the cause.
Right. It just happens. And it's kind of surprising because that focus isn't... Well, it's just a mindset change, you know, just creating the new habits, doing them consistently. It's so simple that it almost feels like it's not going to work. But my favorite thing about these challenges is watching the people grow over the 60 or 90 days and having them look back at where they were just 30, 60 days ago and saying, wow, I've come so far. That's my favorite thing, is just the realization that people have. They're like, you know, I know I've been putting in some work. I haven't been starving. I haven't been exhausted. I haven't been, you know, none of what we think about, the initial thought when you think of diet or a new workout program. You know, I get excited about new workout programs, but not everybody else does. I get that. But, you know, implementing something new can be a little bit scary. And people tend to join our challenges not really knowing what to expect. And by the end, they're like, holy cow, this was amazing. And they have like this new lease on life. And our job is to provide these people with the tools so they can continue on and do this for the rest of their lives. It's my favorite thing.
And my favorite thing is probably on that same level. I'm pretty sure this is what you're talking about. But it's when we have somebody who comes in with this idea that they have to control every aspect of their life in order to succeed. And when they, you know, they get towards the end and they're like, oh, my God, I went to a party and I enjoyed myself. I had some wine. I had some pie. I had some cake. And I didn't, you know, leave the party feeling like a piece of doo-doo, you know, which is what ultimately what a lot of people, you know, come to us feeling like. And they're able to get up the next morning, start drinking a bunch of water, start eating some, you know, healthy salads and some healthy food to kind of get back on track right away. And they feel amazing about themselves. That's when I see that shift in somebody, I know we've made an impact.
Yes.
It's one thing to get them exercising, you know, more consistently. That's one thing. But that type of habit can reverse itself. But once they experience that they don't have to be crazy about, you know, controlling every morsel of food that enters the mouth or every, you know, event that potentially can, you know, can put a piece of cake in front of them. And they can do it with a sense of relaxation and peace. That's when I know something has really shifted inside.
Yes. Favorite. High five.
High five. number nine, which is a simple one, doesn't really require much discussion. It is try practicing the yoga. Women who practice
yoga.
The yoga reported higher body satisfaction than non-practitioners of the yoga. And, you know, I'll point this out, that we oftentimes, we forget about the stretching component of fitness and health. Mm. And it is so important to incorporate some form of stretching. The reason I like yoga is because it's a combination of both the movement, the stretching, and the meditation side of things. And so you can actually, if you've always wanted to do meditation, but you haven't been successful with it, my recommendation is start with yoga, because it still delivers the benefits of meditation while simultaneously giving you the benefits of flexibility, strength, and it keeps you from focusing or obsessing so much on the thinking side of things.
Ah, okay. Yep. The getting more limber, being flexible, having less soreness. If you're somebody who's doing resistance training or something that makes you sore, yoga can help with that. Kind of gives you a little bit of peace for the amount of time that you are doing yoga. You kind of forget about the outside world, or at least that's the goal, you know, partially. You get a little brain break. Mindfulness, more blood flow helps lower stress levels, even if it's just for a little amount of time, you know, and that's kind of goes back to the point we were talking about before of meditation, you know, getting that moment where, okay, for example, I'll go to a yoga class and I'll look at the clock and I'll say, oh, geez, it's 6 p.m. I wonder if the kids have, you know, started heating up their dinner. Or I start thinking things like that. And then, oh, okay, wait, I'm in yoga class. I'm here to enjoy it. And you remind yourself that you're trying to be mindful and in the yoga class. So all of that kind of ties into the meditation as well. Just getting a break, doing something different.
Right. And a science bomb for you. You know, one thing that if you're let's say over the age of 50, one of the things that's going to creep up on you is a decrease in arterial and blood vessel elasticity. So your blood vessels become harder. They don't respond as well to stimulus, and that can negatively impact blood flow. Well, stretching, especially when we start to twist, when we're doing stretches that twist the torso, have a tendency to increase the elasticity of the arteries throughout the body, and we can actually measure that, and it probably has something to do with an impact on nitric oxide production within the body. For some reason, that type of twisting stretching, which we get a lot of in yoga, has a tendency to improve the elasticity of the arteries, which is a better indicator of cardiovascular health and risk of heart disease and heart attack than high cholesterol. So that's a side benefit and a little bit of a science bomb for you.
Cool. Love it.
All right. Well, that's all I got. I hope that's good for everybody. Man, this was a long one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. We had a lot to discuss.
Yeah. All right. Well, give us the final scoop for the show.
Sure. Guys, if you have not yet found us on Facebook, I suggest you do so. We've got recipes and all sorts of fun stuff. I share snacks, all sorts of stuff on our Facebook page. It's just Cut the Fat Podcast. We also have a Cut the Fat Podcast Challenge coming up beginning March of 2019. I'm not sure when you're listening to this podcast, but I do know a lot of our listeners listen to them right when they come out. If they've subscribed, it pops right up on their phone or tablet or whatever you've got. And we're looking forward to getting some fresh new bodies in there.
Absolutely. And we do these about every 60 days. So, you know, we got the next one coming up is going to be a good one because it's when the spring's hitting. So we're going to be doing potentially a lot more outside stuff, you know, for people, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, summer bodies are made in the spring.
Summer bodies are made in the spring. You know, I've heard summer bodies are made in the winter.
Hey,
it's all the same. It's all the same. Yes, that's right.
That's right. Chipping away at it. It's the consistency that counts.
That's correct.
Thank you for listening, guys.
Yeah. We'll see you next time here on Cut the Fat.
Bye.